From the newsrooms of the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, this is Please Explain. I'm Tori Maguire and it is Friday, May 8. For the duration of the COVID-19 crisis, Please Explain is coming to you 5 days a week. Since yesterday, nationwide, 24 new cases of coronavirus have been confirmed. As we record this podcast today, the National Cabinet is meeting to discuss relaxing restrictions on business and social activities, as well as a pandemic mental health plan. For now, I'm joined by science reporter Liam Mannix. Welcome back to Please Explain, Liam.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Tori.
I can happily tell you that the episodes you do on this podcast are very popular.
Well, I'm stoked about that. It's great. It's been really nice, actually. There's been so much interest and enthusiasm for science during this, which I think is really refreshing and really encouraging to see.
The other thing is it's become clear to all of us that until there's a vaccine or a treatment, life cannot return to the way life was in January, really.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, there was some discussion at the start of all of this that, oh, you know, we can do herd immunity, but I think people have started to work out that really herd immunity means a lot of people dying. So you're exactly right. Vaccine is going to be the answer here.
Before we get to a vaccine update from you, Liam, I wanted to ask you about reports this week that the COVID-19 virus has mutated. How much of a concern is that, if it's indeed true?
Yeah, look, this is really interesting, Tori. So this story really encapsulates some of the problems that we're having with science with COVID-19. So the report that you're referring to comes from a team of very good scientists based in the US who have concluded, looking at just the genomes, the genetic data of viruses sequenced around the world, that a second strain, in their words, of the virus has started circulating. And they say that they think it's slightly more infectious. Now, what can we say about that? First of all, this study is what's called a preprint. So it hasn't been peer reviewed by anyone yet. So often we as a newspaper wouldn't even consider reporting on a story like this if it was normal times. Because it's coronavirus season, you know, everybody's very excited and so you want to cover science as it's being developed. But this is science that's at such an early stage that it's very hard to say if it's true or not. And there are a lot of scientists out now in the public record questioning the results of this study. Other studies have come out before Tory saying, oh, we think we've detected a new strain. And the authors of those studies have actually had to come back and say, ooh, we got it wrong. So I think we should be very cautious with interpreting this particular study and saying, oh, yes, there is a new strain circulating. There are, however, some things we can say about how this virus is changing. So as viruses move around in populations, it's natural for them to mutate. It's natural for small errors to crop up in their genetic code, slightly changing the virus. That's part of the reason that flu is able to come back every year and evade our defenses, because it changes so much. But one of the remarkable and, in fact, very lucky things about the virus that causes COVID-19 is that it's got essentially a molecular proofreader. You can imagine it like a little spell check system built inside that makes sure that there aren't too many errors in the virus's genetic code when it moves through a population. And that means its mutation rate is actually very slow. So some of the bigger studies that we have looked all around the world at all of the virus samples that they can find. And the most changes to the genetic code, and this is a genetic code that's 30,000 letters long, are in the region of about 18 letters changed. And the scientists are looking at that and saying, we probably don't think at this stage that that means the virus is doing anything significantly different. So I think to sum up what is quite a tricky, complex scientific discussion, Tori, the virus is changing. At this stage, there's not solid evidence saying that it's changing to become better or worse, but certainly watch this space.
I have to say, Liam, it is mind-blowing to me as a layperson to think that in just a few short months, scientists have been able to crack the DNA of this virus to the point where they can identify the extent to which it's mutated. Like, everyone is talking about how we've had pandemics before and comparing this to Spanish flu and the plague and everything, but we didn't have science like that then, did we?
It's so impressive, really. Like, you have to really hand it to the scientists. There are some things that, you know, you and I have talked about before that could have been done a lot better with this, but the scientific effort, the scientific work here has been so impressive. And we know so much more about this virus than we ever have for any pandemic ever in the past. And I think that's a really encouraging sign.
Okay, so let's get an update on vaccines and treatments, Liam. There is still this sort of general position that we're 18 months to 2 years away from a vaccine, but there's been quite a bit of news on this front since the last time we spoke, hasn't there?
Yeah, there has. So things are progressing well, and things in some ways are progressing quite quickly. I think we've spoken about before, your typical timeline to make a vaccine for anything is 10 years. The world record, the Guinness Book of Records for making a vaccine is 5 years. We're trying to do it much, much quicker than that. And there are some encouraging signs. You know, I think there are 3 vaccines that are in human trials now. There are some encouraging signs coming out of animal research. But the thing to keep in mind with all of this, Tori, is that the odds are when you read a story about a promising vaccine going into humans, the odds are that it won't work. And we know that. That's borne out by a long history of clinical trials. Most things that work in animals and work in lab dishes, when you test them on humans, they just don't end up working. There's probably a slightly higher chance of that actually happening, of these vaccines failing this time, because we're moving them so quickly. So I think what we can say is that everybody is working incredibly hard. You know, there's some real bravery from people saying, yeah, I'm willing, dose me up with this test vaccine. I think also we need a note of caution. It's probably unlikely, just looking at the odds, that these first vaccines to go into humans are going to be the ones that work.
What about treatments for people who do contract the virus, Liam? What are the developments on that?
Yeah, now here's where it gets interesting, Tori. So we've talked a little bit in the past about a drug called remdesivir. Now, remdesivir is a really interesting cutting-edge piece of biotechnology. It was originally developed by a company in the US called Gilead to fight Ebola, and it didn't work there, but the scientists thought that there may be some similar mechanisms between how Ebola works and how SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19, works. So they've started testing this drug, and there are some exciting things coming out. So last week we reported on a trial which was started by the US National Institutes of Health, and it's a high quality trial. It gave remdesivir to about 500 people with COVID-19, and it gave another 500 people a sugar pill. It's funded by the government, so these are high quality trials. And the trial, remarkably, Tori, had to be stopped early because the people who were taking remdesivir seemed to be improving so much quicker than the people who weren't. The improvement rate was about 30%, so they got better 30% faster. That data didn't show that it reduced deaths, but in a bigger study, it might. Now, that's really encouraging and exciting, and we spoke to a few scientists who said to us, yeah, wow, you know, sit up in your chairs, this is cool. But again, we need to exercise a little bit of caution. This study, this remdesivir trial, has not been released to the public. It was released at a press conference by Donald Trump. And as one scientist said to me, the credibility of scientific announcements coming out of the White House is not high.
Was this before or after the discussion about injecting disinfectant?
This was after, Tori.
Right. Okay. I also want to ask you, Liam, about a drug that I'm going to butcher the name, hydroxychloroquine. I think that's how you say it.
HCQ, the scientists call it, because they can't say it either.
Okay. All the major newspapers, including ours, this week ran advertisements by Clive Palmer, spooking the fact that he had stockpiled this drug because he believed that it was the future. What do we know about the merits or not of hydroxychloroquine?
So, yeah, this drug has been enormously hyped, Tori. It was hyped by Donald Trump, who came out and called it a game changer and basically said to people, start taking it. And of course, a drug by a similar name is sold as a pool cleaner, and a person in Arizona bought that and took it and died. So it's got some nasty history, this one. Scientists have been doing more and more trials on HCQ. At this stage, we don't have a really big high quality trial, like 1,000 people randomized, that could tell us definitively, yes, it does work, or no, it doesn't work. But the signals coming from a lot of small trials are not particularly encouraging. I thought you might ask me about this, so I asked Dr. Gaten Burjoe, he's perhaps Australia's leading authority on HCQ, what he made of all of the smaller trials so far. And he said to me that on the basis of the studies published, there is simply no clear proof that HCQ works either to prevent contracting COVID-19 or to cure it. And there is increasing evidence that it may be quite bad for you, because we know that if you take this drug in large enough amounts, it can do damage to your heart rhythm. So I don't want to comment on the politics of this, Tori, but if I had a very large sum of money, I'm not sure that I would be buying a huge stockpile of HCQ on the evidence that we have at the moment.
Oh, I'd love to know what you would be stockpiling if you had a huge amount of money, Liam.
Toilet paper, Tori. Huge stockpiles of it.
Liam, thanks for joining me again. As we're recording, the Prime Minister and the Premiers are in their National Cabinet talking about how they can ease restrictions. So I'm sure we'll all be watching the Prime Minister's press conference this afternoon with much interest.
I'm just praying he lets me outside so I can have a beer, Tori.
Aren't we all? Thanks for joining me again, Liam.
Thanks so much for having me, Tori.
Today's episode of Please Explain was produced by Yuji Shimada and Amelia Maguire. The journalists, editors, photographers, producers and tech team at The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald are working tirelessly at the moment to cover the COVID-19 crisis factually, fairly and comprehensively. For coverage you can trust, visit our websites or buy our papers. To support our journalism, you can subscribe via our homepages or just search subscribe, The Sydney Morning Herald or The Age. I'm Tori Maguire. Thanks for listening.